day.
Oh, hello again. So what I'm presenting with you today is going to be a little bit of a research project I've been working on for the past year or two. I want to acknowledge a little bit of help that I've gotten from folks over at Texas Tech, contributing some ideas in terms of how to refine this project and also helping with a little bit of debugging already. Still very much a work in progress, still some more things to do. So comments, suggestions, certainly all are welcome. So this project is based on the progress and condition data that USDA puts out between the summer and fall of every year. It's commonly cited by analysts, but usually when you hear analysts talk about this data, and I'm not talking about just cotton analysts, but also analysts from other crops that I've heard, is they'll say, you know, we're using this crop and condition data, but we don't really trust it. I'm not really sure why they don't trust it. Maybe that they don't understand it. May haven't had a chance to play with it. It is kind of nasty in that it is weekly data and it is spread out across the country. They also say, you know, it's survey-based data, but a lot of our data, you know, nationally are survey-based, including our employment figures. And I don't think anybody questions those. And I think another reason why people question these data is they say they're objective. But of course, they're collected by agricultural professionals across the country. And if any of you are out there in the field taking a look at it and you said the crop was in poor or excellent condition, I think you could have a qualified opinion about it. So the point of all this project is to see what can these data tell us, and specifically what can they tell us about yield at different points in time throughout the growing season. These data themselves, they've been published since 1986. Observers go out in the field between April and November. You take a look at the commonality in terms of overlapping over this 30-some year period. Generally, it's from early June through mid to early October. These surveys are submitted to USDA every Sunday or Monday, and they're published every week, the first day of the week, business week, at 4 o'clock. National data, just in terms of how this aggregation occurs from state moving up to U.S. figures, is through planted acres. So you take a look at crop progress data. I think some of you probably all have familiarity with this. Five different stages. I'm talking about acres planted, squaring, bowls set, bowls open, and then acres harvested. Planted and harvested, sort of somewhat self-explanatory. USDA has set definitions in terms of when you reach a squaring stage. If there are at least one square that has appeared, it's considered to be squaring. Similarly, if you do see one bowl set, it's considered to be bowl setting stage. And then if you do see one bowl open, at least it is considered to be in the bowl's open stage. For crop condition, this is where we get to things being a little bit more subjective. Five different condition ratings ranging from very poor to excellent. And once again, these data are reported from June through to what tends to be early to mid-October. And the way that they're reported in terms of the NAS database is weeks numbered between 23 and 39. So what we've done is we found a backdoor to the NAS QuickStats database where you just download the whole thing at one time. That enables to help take a look at this data a little bit easier, more easily than you can by taking a look at those PDFs that come out every single week. Here I'm just going to walk you through some of the descriptive statistics that have come out of that database. These are national crop rating numbers for the current crop year through those weeks 23 to 39. So really fast, I'm just going to do a homemade video approach here in terms of walking you through in terms of how these things changed. Essentially what we see is some erosion from fair and good as we get deeper into the season and things start to migrate more into the very poor and poor ends of the chart. Things staying relatively constant in terms of the amount of the crop rated in excellent condition. So that's one way you can take a look at these data. And by that point, I'm probably saying it wouldn't be easier just to throw it in a time series chart. So we did that here. So what we've got is crop condition ratings for Georgia for the current crop year. You take a look at these numbers. We do see good trending down there at the top. We also see excellent trending, maybe a little bit higher. Key point with these Georgian rankings is you're probably looking for that big drop off in terms of condition rankings. Thing is that Hurricane Michael hit essentially the week after these crop condition reports started being issued, so that didn't really show up in our Georgian reports. That's something we missed in terms of predictive ability from these data relative to yield for the current crop year. Similarly, we can take a look at the situation for Texas, a little bit of a mixed bag here, a little bit of spaghetti soup. That's just the way it is, but if you want to take a look at what's going on, you do see a higher proportion rated in the fair, the poor, or very poor condition that we see for Georgia. You did see a little bit of improvement in terms of acres moving out of very poor into our other categories. As the season went on, we got a little bit of rain late in the game. Just to simplify things a little bit too, this is a way that things are commonly reported when they talk about crop condition data. So those analysts, just when they sit after they say they don't trust it, they tend to reframe these data, repitch them in terms of taking a look at the proportion they're reported to be good or excellent versus poor or very poor. So that's what you got here, just a little bit simpler chart to look at. Once again, same general patterns, a little bit of a decrease out of very poor, poor, and into good, excellent, and fair at the end of the season there. Here's another way of taking a look at some of these data. What I'm showing you here are averages across the different crop years for different weeks and times. So once again, these data are reported weekly. We have that standard set from week 23 to week 39 for every year going back to 1986. What I'm showing you in the top portion is the mean rating in that first week of common reporting for the U.S. and then also for the regions. These regional data we created ourselves by using the same weighting by acres planted. At the bottom, you have the coefficient of variation, so this is standard deviation divided by the mean. Just get an idea about where these rankings lie and where do we see the most variation in these rankings, which could feed into efforts about predicting what they might actually be able to tell us. If you take a look at these numbers, what you can see is that, you know, we got a pretty even distribution for most of our regions, with the exception being the far west. In California, it's always sunny. Conditions are always pretty good. You take a look at the high concentration they have in good or excellent there and the very low concentration they have in very poor ratings. That feeds into the situation we have the high coefficient of variation for California or far west because there being such a just a low mean value there. So with the visor being low, we get a big bump up there. You take a look at where we other well, the other regions where you do see a decent amount of variation. Southeast, we see pretty good coefficient of variation in the very poor category. It may have to do with the fact that the Southeast can be hit by hurricanes later in the season, which of course won't be reflected in the readings we have from early in the season here in week 23. We also got similar data. I'm pulling this is week 30. So this is midway through our 23 to 39 week range. Seeing essentially some of the similar things, far west having high coefficient of variation for a poor, very poor reading simply because things are always sunny out there. Still seeing some higher coefficients of readings out there in the southeast on the poor, very poor readings. Then finally taking a look at the last week in terms of our reporting, similar distributions here, seeing some of that stuff getting tamped down in terms of the outlier effect out there in the far west. But the point of all this, once again, is to put into a model to see how well we can predict yield or not. We have essentially three dependent variables that we're looking at to model. One's year per planted acre, year per harvested acre, and abandonment. Take a look at yields over time. Of course, I'm increasing the time trend. So each of our specifications include a time trend in there with the exception of abandonment, which we don't really expect to trend one way or another over time. The point of all this is to help feed it into some forecasting models. Can progress and condition help us forecast anything? Problem is these data are kind of complex. So I already talked about there being a lot of weeks of data and a lot of changes in these data. Here I show you some of the complexity related to the crop progress numbers. To take a look at these crop progress numbers, of course, we're talking about different stages of different periods in the season. We start out with planting. So for this year, the first crop condition report we had came out May 20th. On May 20th, we already had half of our acres planted. As we move further through the season, we have to handshake into other progress stages. The question is, when you put this in the model, how do you actually model progress? So the way that we did this in terms of feeding this into our regression frameworks was to simply look at how this data handshaked with itself. We created a rule that the progress reading that we're going to feed into our regressions is the latest stage available that has a mean of at least 10% of acres having reached that stage. So that's one question that we had. Another question is, do we aggregate or disaggregate condition? Do we model condition as good or excellent? That could help reduce some collinearity, or do we model it all the way out, including poor versus very poor, which potentially could allow us for some differentiation, which could be important regarding yield. So we ran regressions to test it all. On top of some of the things I already touched on, we also tried some different functional forms. We tried linear versus log for our time variable. So you take a look at our yield number, or if you were looking at earlier, it seems like things may be plateauing off a little bit. So maybe we should model time and logarithmic function instead of as a linear function. But when we did the models, linear did a better job. So we already ruled out the logarithmic estimation for that. We did run this across 25 geographies. We had those 17 weeks that we touched on between weeks 23 and 39. We put all this together, gives us 72 specifications times 17 weeks times 21 geographies. So that's a lot of regressions. It may sound a little bit like data mining, but the thing is, you know, criticism of data mining is you're trying to change, you're tweaking your theoretical model. Here we're not changing our theoretical model. We're just exploring best fit, the purposes, forecasting. So I don't see any problem with it. Maybe you guys do. In the output, we ranked in terms of what gives us the best fit, adjusted R-squared, AIC, SIC, that penalizes us, essentially the measures that can penalize us for including extraneous information. So a lot to look at. These are models that we've got. Once again, things are sort of outlined, a lot of the complicated things going on there. Findings, progress and condition. Do you do a better job of explaining than time trend alone? So here I've got adjusted R-squared figures for yield planted models. Let me take a look across the bottom. These are R-squared results for weeks 23 to 39. Once again, you can see as you get deeper into the season, we do a better job in terms of our predictability, which could be expected because as you get deeper into the season, you're going to have less, we're going to have more information regarding the accuracy of these relative to yields. We take a look at what's going on in terms of the individual variables. Progress generally was insignificant. We did see among the different regions, we saw the highest significance for the Mid-South, particularly relative to abandonment with respect to progress, which is a little bit interesting. I don't know if you guys have any information about why that may or may not be the case. We take a look at conditional variables. They are more significant when aggregated. That's probably, once again, due to the fact that there's less collinearity going on there. Finally, just to touch on the progress thing, I don't think my last bullet point here does a good job of explaining what I'm talking about when generally only one side shows significance. Oh, so that's really specific to conditions. So generally either the good or excellent does a good job in terms of being significant or poor, very poor, but not both simultaneously. So one side of the equation tends to work in terms of contributing to the model. So by this point, you guys may be asking, so what? That's a lot of work. What does this all mean to yields? And honestly, we're still figuring that out. This is the Bell-wide hustle. I was hoping I would have some stuff done, but there's never enough time at the start of the year. Taking a real quick look at the residuals, it depends on the week, depends on the model, if we're able to beat the USDA forecast. So there are certain times of the year when these results do produce something that's worthwhile, something that does improve upon what the USDA is already doing. There are some times when it does not. So we're still working on that. Future work, something that I really like to take a look at, is to incorporating abandonment more directly. So you take a look at our different, predictions of yield. When we take a look at yield per harvested acre, you're implicitly already controlling for abandonment. I think what we should do is segregate these things out a little bit. It takes a somewhat nested approach. Find a way to explain abandonment. Drop that into a yield planted, or actually be a yield harvested model potentially, to come up with a way to explain everything all at once. But the goal of all this is to get to the point when we can improve upon potentially USDA estimates, particularly USDA trend-based estimates that are put out early for a crop year. And I'm pretty sure we can get there. We're already there for certain models, certain times. So that's all I've got. Comments, questions, please. Yep.
July the 4th, there's a cotton that's blooming in Lubbock, and it's defoliating in South Texas, and what regular means on either one of those is a completely different thing. That's what's always giving me a whole lot of haul about it. Pretty much waiting on what's right in the class.
Sure, yeah, all fair points. And I think, refining the geography, so here, which was anything in terms of the national level, and I've still got some waiting to do through these results at the subnational, subregional level. So that could be improved. And I think also when you take a look at re-aggregating up to the national level, maybe you can weight different weights. So it's like a Texas where you got such big variability, like you're saying, the condition ratings, maybe Sure. Yeah, but I'm thinking even just get that to the national level, because these are reported by state. So if, you know, if we can say, you know, we've got a high degree of uncertainty with Texas, instead of just using a weighting by acres planted like the USDA does to come up with our national number, maybe you say we treat Texas with more uncertainty than North Carolina or something like that. So a lot of possibilities, a lot of things to play with, a lot of data and messiness. Yeah. Yeah, we could. So, I mean, ultimately, you know, with yield, it feeds into production. Production feeds into price. So you could get all the way there. So I think if we do have potential to have models that reliably produce estimates that are better than USDA ones potentially earlier in the year, then you could come up with, you know, some arguments for why the market or prices should pay attention to these numbers. But another sort of related point, too, is that the market moves on the weather. The weather moves these condition ratings, so the market may digest it already, even without, you know, beyond using these.